It's time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones. Looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist, and I thank each of you for listening today. You know, you may have heard of the term insulin resistance, and you may have asked yourself, well, you know, what is insulin resistance? Or how would I know if I had insulin resistance? We want to kind of discuss this topic today and answer your questions about insulin resistance. Our co-host is Christina Swigert. Christina is a licensed nutritionist who sees clients in our White Bear office and also at our St. Paul office. She teaches many of our corporate classes and our corporate wellness classes. That's really what they are. Mm-hmm. And she's a mother of two young children, and she's very busy, and she answers a lot of questions about how to feed kids healthy in our kind of busy world. Don't you, Christina?
Right. It's not always easy. It can be done.
It can. So, Christina, kind of describe what it means to be insulin resistant.
Sure. And I think a lot of people have probably heard the term, but maybe don't quite understand what's going on inside the body when this is going on. And, you know, it can start at any age. And health problems involving insulin, the cardiovascular system, are really starting at really young ages now. And, you know, if a mother has gestational diabetes, which means that she had diabetes when she was pregnant, not before or after, those babies are often born with some insulin resistance.
That's kind of interesting even to think about that, isn't it, Christina?
Yes, it is. And I don't think many people do.
I don't think many people even know that.
No.
So babies are born with insulin resistance. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, very interesting. So it's important what we feed our young children. We also know that those babies tend to be born with more fat cells, which also puts them at a higher risk of developing obesity and diabetes when they are adults. So, young adults, probably.
So think about that again. As if you're a person that, you know, if you're pregnant and you have gestational diabetes, that fetus, that baby is probably going to have more fat cells.
Mm-hmm. And the good thing is that even when you have gestational diabetes, there are a lot of things you can do to control it to really decrease that risk later on in life, too, which is nutrition.
You know, from research about the effects of gestational diabetes on the fetus, you know, I guess what, as a nutritionist, we just have to conclude that nutrition is really important when mothers are pregnant. I mean, it's just so important for people.
Right.
Well, at any age.
It is.
But especially during pregnancy.
Right. And, you know, some people, that's when they eat the healthiest. And for others, it's when they eat the worst because they think it doesn't matter.
Like, you know, free reign. They can eat any kind of junk they want.
Right. But the chips, the soda, blizzards, those late night blizzard cravings, french fries to dip in the blizzard, you know, people all things, cereal, and all those high sugar foods are the foods that are going to lead to the gestational diabetes and really should be off limits for most pregnant women.
Or very, very, very limited amounts.
Yes. Every once in a while, a treat is okay. But
so kind of let us explain this very complex process that occurs in insulin resistance. You know, all the cells all over your body are exposed to high sugar levels when people eat too many carbohydrates. Too many carbohydrates, really. And so what does that mean, too many? Well, you know, average is between 100 and 150 grams of carbs per day. And that seems to work for most people.
Right, without causing problems. But most people are eating probably between 300 and 600 grams of carbohydrates a day, and sometimes even more. And one way to kind of put that in perspective is to realize that when you sit down to a big plate of pasta, that already is giving you over 100 grams of carbohydrates right in that one sitting.
And, you know, when lots of times people are told to actually eat those big plates of pasta, aren't they?
Because it's low fat and low calorie.
Yes. So then this is what happens biochemically. You know, to correct this excess sugar or glucose level, our pancreas produces insulin to normalize that blood sugar level.
And it does that so that insulin and, well, the insulin and then the sugar and a lot of times trans fats that people are eating along with them, the sugar, are creating kind of a coating over what are called your insulin receptors. And this coating is called insulin resistance.
So people might be out there asking, well, so what's the big deal about that? What's the problem with a little coating on your cell receptors? Well, there is a big deal about that. This coating blocks the absorption of glucose, and then it requires more insulin to be released to carry the glucose into the cells. And guess what? The more insulin you have, the more insulin resistance you actually have. So you don't want too much insulin. You want just the right amount.
Right. And when we continue to develop this insulin resistance, what it's really causing in the body is inflammation and hormone imbalances, obesity, a reduced immune function. And, you know, something that I know, Dar, we were at a conference and they talked about is that, you know, it's not that obesity is the cause of these hormone imbalances or the heart disease, things like that. And I actually heard that referred to this morning on TV that, you know, oh, weight's the big issue here with cardiovascular health. They all are related to a similar cause, obesity fitting right in with these other things too. And it's usually the insulin resistance and inflammation.
Almost always the insulin resistance underneath all that.
Yep.
So we wanted to kind of approach this topic a little bit differently. Christina, I'd like to connect insulin resistance to the cause of polycystic ovary syndrome, or some people say ovarian syndrome, and some people call it PCOS, and how insulin resistance is related to body pain and how it increases inflammation, and also how it causes asthma and allergies. So again, like Christina was just saying, it takes on all these different avenues of how it can cause chronic illness. But number one, we wanted to talk first about the polycystic ovarian syndrome.
So, Dar, maybe we can describe exactly what that is, because oftentimes I will say PCOS and people just aren't aware of what it is, of how many women have it, and why it's such a big problem.
You know, the way I kind of explain to clients is if they have PCOS, they have little cysts on their ovaries, and then these cysts, they fill up with fluid, and sometimes that can cause a lot of pain.
Right.
And sometimes they actually pop open, burst open, and that's really painful.
Mm-hmm.
But it can cause a lot of other side effects too.
Right. And really they say that about 1 in 10 women have polycystic ovary syndrome, and that girls as young as 10 or 11 can have it.
So think about this, because just think about this for a minute. Young girls, 10 to 11, can have polycystic ovary syndrome. Kind of amazing, isn't it?
Right.
And that 1 out of 10 women have it, at least.
Yes, that's a high percentage, and we see it a lot. And you know, it really is the most common cause of infertility in women as well.
And we know that infertility problems have really skyrocketed in the last few years.
Yes.
So what are some symptoms? You know, irregular or kind of infrequent or sometimes frequent menstrual cycles, usually not very often.
Mm-hmm.
Infertility. You get an increased hair on your face, your chest, your back, not exactly where you want.
Right.
You get acne. You know, you get patches of dark skin on your neck, arms, breasts, thighs. Not really nice, you know,
right.
Things.
Right. And sometimes some people don't really have very many of the symptoms.
Exactly.
So, you know, again, it's very individually based. And, you know, we understand that the symptoms you can have, but, you know, what is the cause? A lot of times we want to address the symptoms. You know, how can we prevent this? You know, how can we treat polycystic ovary syndrome? And, you know, unfortunately, today, the real common treatments that women get, you know, maybe they get told, make sure you're eating better, lose weight. They just get told, lose some weight. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, how? But then oftentimes women are being put on either birth control pills and or diabetic medications such as metformin. And, you know, medication really is not the best solution for really treating this. And it really is recognized well with research and a lot of professionals in the medical field, nutrition field, that nutrition really is the big problem.
Yeah, but you know what? It's really, Christina, we have to admit that I think for a lot of people, they say, well, if I can pop a pill.
Yes.
It's a lot easier than changing my eating.
Yes.
So what's wrong with just popping a pill? I mean, you know.
Right.
To be honest with you. I mean, you know, let's think about people that really don't want to make changes in their diet.
Right.
What's long term? Does it work?
No, it doesn't usually. I mean, every once in a while you hear people, oh, yeah, it was fine. But long term, it's just usually adding to the problem. And it makes it more difficult to really deal with it down the road when maybe you don't want to take the pills anymore.
So what is the nutritional problem? You know, whether it's causes this polycystic ovarian syndrome. Well, it's basically eating too many carbohydrates for your personal body. You know, and so that means that that can lead to high blood sugars, insulin resistance, and then in turn it creates a hormonal imbalance. And because, you know, that insulin is like a master hormone over all your other hormones, so it can throw all of your other hormones off is basically what can happen.
Right. And, you know, PCOS is another chronic illness, and the first level of treatment really should be therapeutic nutritional counseling, because it can be very difficult to when these changes are necessary to make them. So, you know, really helping young women to reduce their consumption of these processed carbohydrates is going to give them the only real answer to really help take care of the symptoms and the underlying problems.
So let's look at some real nutritional changes.
Yes.
That will make a difference. You know, first of all, you got to stop drinking juice. I think that's number one. You know, if you have a little girl that's 3 or 4 years old, or even a little boy that's 3 and 4 years old, mm-hmm. the first thing, I mean, how do you do this with juice at your house, Christina?
There's no juice at my house.
There's no juice. Okay. Or, you know, if you are really, you know, you're set on this juice thing with your kids, you know, maybe you take a fourth of a cup of juice and you mm-hmm. put it in a glass of water, and then it has the reduced amount of sugar.
Right.
Because, you know, 12 ounces, and that's, you know, if you get a 7 or 8 year old, they're drinking, you know, 12 ounces of juice 3 or 4 times a day, probably.
Right.
Well, picture this. A 12-ounce glass of juice has 12 teaspoons of sugar in it, you know, and if you're drinking that three or four times a day, that's you know, could be 50 teaspoons of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You measure that out in a bowl, and you can see how that would cause high blood sugars and insulin resistance. So, you know, another one that you have to kind of take a look at is skim milk. What we recommend is changing that. Get rid of the skim milk and bring in whole organic milk.
Right.
And much less sugar, isn't it?
Right, and it's more balanced. That fat helps your body process the sugar a little bit better. And so maybe the general recommendation that we get to switch our kids from whole milk to skim milk at 2 isn't always the best approach.
Might not be, you know, and I think we have to really start looking at what is causing this insulin resistance, because it's an epidemic going on right now.
It is.
And it's starting at a very young age. So we're going to take a quick little break. You're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company specializing in life-changing nutrition education. And I want to point out a couple of great classes we're teaching this next week. On June 18th, we have Balanced Foods for Balanced Moods in White Bear Lake. And on Thursday night, June 18th, in Wayzata, we have Gut Reaction, Restore Your Digestive Health Through Nutrition. So if you have questions for us today, 651-641-1071.
If you're pre-diabetic, insulin resistant, or diabetic, you know that managing your blood sugar requires careful attention to food choices and eating patterns. At times, it may even feel like a full-time job. Do cravings drive you to poor food choices to boost your blood sugar quickly? Would you like a simple, healthy eating plan? Nutritional Weight and Wellness has helped hundreds of clients successfully prevent and manage diabetes. Their clients have reported better fasting blood sugars and A1Cs, along with more energy and greater well-being. Following a balanced eating plan can also help avoid hearing and vision loss, impotence, and kidney failure that can result from high blood sugars. Nutritionists prepare individual food plans and explain what to eat and how frequently to eat to stabilize your blood sugar. Eating the right combination of foods diminishes cravings and increases metabolism, which helps with weight loss.
Nutritional Weight and Wellness, 651-699-3438, or visit their website, weightandwellness.com, to learn more about classes or individual consultations. Their offices are located in both St. Paul and Wayzata.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. And Darlene was mentioning some classes that we have coming up right before we left. And I'm just going to mention another one. We have a class on June 18th, also Wednesday night, in our St. Paul office. And that's our 3-hour menopause class that is very popular. And women really learn a lot in that class. And we teach that one with Sandy Greenquist from the Menopause Center of Minnesota. So if you have questions about that class or any of the other classes that we've mentioned, feel free to give our office a call today, even 651-699-3438, or check out our website at www.weightandwellness.com.
So, Christina, before we went on break, we were talking about the choice of dairy products.
Right.
And I think sometimes this is like eye-opening to people.
Yes.
Because it seems like as soon as kids get to be about, well, how old would you say?
Two, even.
Two. Then they're really encouraged to go on skim milk, right?
Right, and low-fat dairy products.
Low-fat dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that basically low-fat dairy products have more sugar in them.
Right.
And what happens then?
Then their blood sugar goes up faster.
And then they have the potential to have insulin resistance much faster.
Right.
So when we look at things, we look at we really do encourage organic milk. I mean, that's a given because of all the hormones and antibiotics that are in regular milk. So for little kids, organic milk sure is the better choice, isn't it?
Right.
And maybe, you know, maybe they don't need to drink quarts and quarts.
Right. I think that's the other thing, too, is a lot of times I think kids are given too much milk because they think it's such a great thing. But even whole milk can raise blood sugar as well. So you still have to be careful with that.
Exactly. So I think we will go ahead and take a caller here.
All right.
Hi, Rose. Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. You have a question today?
Hi, I do. My daughter is 23 now,
mm-hmm.
and she was diagnosed at the young age of eighth grade with PCOS.
And not uncommon.
No, and she was very symptomatic, you know, the hair and
right.
acne, and things were really changing. So they wanted to raise her estrogen, so they put her on birth control. Well, I did. I mean, I'm her mom. We put her on a low-dose birth control pill, and then also an anti-androgen.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, she's 23, and she's still been on all of these things. And then, her second year of college, all of a sudden, they started to notice that her cholesterol was rising.
Yes.
So, yeah. So she went to a dietitian, and she went on. She was really good about it. Well, now she's been in Europe for a year, and she thought, oh, no, what's going to happen when I go to Europe? It's been better.
Well, certainly.
I was laughing when you said about the milk, and Courtney was all worried about dairy because they don't have skim milk.
That's right.
I mean, she's doing beautifully, but I was thinking, when you were talking about, you know, having trouble getting pregnant, you know, at eighth grade, that was kind of like the last thing she wanted to even
think
about.
Well, yes.
But, you know, now as her mom, I'm thinking, okay, she's been on birth control since eighth grade.
Yeah.
She's been on this anti-androgen, which
right.
they just keep kind of giving her because it seems to be working. But what should she do when she gets back to the States? Should she be reevaluated? And do you have any recommendations?
I think
will she always be on birth control pills to
no.
raise her estrogen?
Oh, no. I think it's a nutritional problem. And I would say, hey, make an appointment with Christina and help her realize and I think she's already realizing that in Europe because she's eating less of the sugar items and more of the real fat items. And the other thing, the quality of food probably that she's eating in Europe is better.
Well, she said it's real food, Mom. We just eat
real food.
Yeah.
And so maybe she's already reducing her polycystic ovarian syndrome naturally just with the nutrition she's taking in when she's eating in Europe. So all she should do is bring that information back and make an appointment with Christina, and we'll teach her a little bit more on how to continue that. And, yes, I think, you know, I think being on birth control pills that long, she is it stops your ovulating, so then you no longer make progesterone, which is your balancing hormone. And so lots of long-term side effects from all those things.
Well, you know, she has allergies, and you're talking like allergies. I didn't know allergies were connected to this.
Sure.
And
I mean, it's all connected to insulin resistance.
Okay. So should she go to her doctor and have all the blood work drawn and stuff first, or?
She certainly is. That would be probably a good idea. But then look at that as, hey, this is really a nutritional problem.
Okay. And then you think at some point, because her fear is if she goes off the birth control, it's not pretty.
No, no. And we've worked with
hair and patches.
You know what? We have worked with many, many, many women that have mm-hmm. come off their medication and done it with an eating plan. With really following a careful eating plan, and it's worked beautifully. And the neat thing is, when they do want to get pregnant, they're able to then. So, and
really?
That's so important, I think,
right,
to have that choice.
Well, yeah. You know, when I remember the pediatric endocrinologist saying, oh, well, there'll be so many amazing things you can do then. And I thought, well, yeah, but isn't there something different here?
Right. Right, exactly.
Okay, well, she's not back until later, but I'll have her call you guys.
Okay. Great. Thanks for calling.
That was a great question,
you.
Rose. Thank you.
Bye now.
So as we were kind of talking about that a little bit, we want to make sure that people, we were talking about, I think that was a great example,
yeah,
that in Europe they don't use low-fat products in dairy products, but basically their products are hormone-free.
Yeah.
So that makes the difference. But I think there's some other things that we need to look at when we're looking at high-sugar insulin resistance. You know, some of the things that sneak into your food so easily.
Right, and just into your everyday life. You know, again, we were talking about foods that are going to raise your blood sugar because that's how you develop insulin resistance. So don't buy chips.
I know it.
You know, we don't buy it. Sometimes they end up in our house when we have gatherings with lots of people, but then we try and get them right back out because only 4 chips turn into a teaspoon of sugar. And I know pretty much most people cannot stop at 4 chips.
The only people that I know that can stop at 4 chips is Kathy and Corey.
Oh, yeah.
My son and my daughter-in-law. 4 chips, 2 chips, that's all they ever eat. But
sure,
that's not, and they do not have any insulin resistance.
No, they don't. You know, a bag of chips, which people can polish off pretty easily, can equal up to a whole bowl of sugar, which most people wouldn't sit down and eat that.
No.
So, you know, limit pasta to a rare treat or really limit the serving size, no more than 3/4 cup, because that shoots blood sugar up so quickly.
Yes. Well, you know, and we're stretching it a little when we even say 3/4
yes.
of a cup. Really, a serving of pasta is a half. Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's hardly worth doing it.
Right. And no soda. Not the sugared stuff, but also not the diet. That's not good either. And the research really clearly tells us that it leads to insulin resistance, that soda does. And clear out the boxes of cereal. Cereal really just equals sugar in the body.
So, you know, this may sound kind of harsh, but again, if you look at it, infertility, obesity, hypertension, and diabetes are also harsh health conditions. And even thinning hair, acne, these are all harsh. And all these conditions can and will occur if the food choices continue to be high sugar. So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company specializing in therapeutic nutrition counseling. Today, we're discussing insulin resistance and its effect on your body. You know, people with diabetes and insulin resistance are at a much higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So I guess the message is give up carbs and save your brain. So questions today, 651-641-1071.
Dishing Up Nutrition has listeners in San Francisco, Miami, International Falls, and Billings, Montana. Whether you live in the Twin Cities or across the country, nutritional guidance is as close as your phone. Nutritional Weight and Wellness offers phone consultations for people at a distance or too busy for office appointments. Would you like to increase your energy, lower cholesterol, or resolve digestive problems? Here's how phone consultations work. First, complete a health history. Next, discuss your health goals with a nutritionist. Then she creates an eating plan for your biochemistry and lifestyle. You make the time, and Nutritional Weight and Wellness provides the plan and support. Make the call from the privacy of your home or office and get nutrition expertise from the people you trust. For information, call Nutritional Weight and Wellness at 651-699-3438. Outside the Twin Cities, call 888-805-8954 toll-free or go to weightandwellness.com.
This ain't no disco.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Christina Swigert, licensed nutritionist, and I'm here today with Darlene Kvist, also a licensed nutritionist. And today we are discussing the role that insulin resistance plays in health problems. You know, in addition to being insulin resistant, many people with Alzheimer's disease also are deficient in B vitamins. And processed foods do not have B vitamins in them, at least not naturally occurring B vitamins.
That's right. Exactly. So we have a lot of callers, so let's take... Hi, Betty. Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. You have a question for us today?
Hi.
Hi there.
What a fascinating show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have endometriosis, and after many, many things to try to control it, I'm using a progesterone-coated IUD.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one out there.
Right.
And it has worked really well. I mean, incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
However, I wonder if the progesterone might be increasing depression, making depression really hard to treat. That has been a significant change, and I can't think of what else.
Well, I think that, you know, progesterone is the hormone that is kind of the mood stabilizer. Usually we think of that as a mood stabilizer. And also, I know that sometimes when people have a little bit too much progesterone, they actually are they're a little more drugged feeling. They're kind of tired feeling. You know, it's like balancing that out so that you have the right amount. Usually our ovaries make about 20 milligrams of progesterone every day. And when you're pregnant, you're making about 400 milligrams of progesterone every day. And for most women, they feel great at that dosage. And I'm not sure how much you're getting with an IUD, what that level is.
Yeah.
But it could be that it's a little bit too high for you. And maybe if it was reduced in some way, then you would actually benefit from it. And because it's certainly probably helping to balance that high estrogen level in your body. And I don't know how long you've been doing this, but is it just a new thing, a new type of treatment for you, or have you been doing it for months?
It's been about a year. It takes about 6 months till you know if it's working, and it thins the lining of the uterus and wherever else there's implants.
Mm-hmm.
So that has worked.
Okay.
But I just wonder if, and there's no way to, you can't get like a lesser dose. You either have to have it in or out. And out is just, I can't even imagine it right now. So it was that, it's made such a difference. So I'm wondering if there's anything I could do to like maybe up the estrogen to counteract it a little bit without
I think that's
don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that.
Oh.
I think what you need to do is look at make sure that how you're eating is keeping your blood sugar balanced and you're not creating more higher estrogen levels in your body. And, you know, you may want to investigate another possibility of a different way of that progesterone delivery. And there's many different ways because it's a bioidentical hormone. So that's just, it's some thoughts for you.
It's an interesting thought. Yeah, I really hadn't.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces involved. So, I think just looking at to put it all together to make it work best for you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That,
very interesting call. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So I think what we'll do is take another caller here. Barbara, you have a question for us?
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You had said get rid of all the juice.
Yes.
Now, does that include 100% juice?
Oh, yes.
Every morning I have grapefruit juice, of grapefruit juice with my breakfast because I don't drink coffee.
How much grapefruit juice do you drink?
One cup.
So like 8 ounces.
8 to 10 ounces in the morning.
Okay. Well, it's probably grapefruit juice might have the lowest amount of sugar, but look at the number of carbohydrates you're taking in. Now, some people, that's okay, but for other people, which is about 80% of the population now, it's still too high in sugar. So, you have to look at each person individually. You may be able to handle that much sugar in juice.
I've got 4 kids, and, I only buy 100% juice, but I do buy usually concentrate, and then I make it with a little more water, like instead of 3 cans of water, 4 cans of water.
Well, you might even want to increase that to 5 or 6 cans of water. So basically, you're going for the taste, but you're not going for the sugar.
Right.
And that works just fine then.
I also buy that V8 Fusion, which is 100% juice. But
I think the Fusion doesn't, isn't this right, Christina? Fusion means it's fused with
fruit juice, right?
Fruit juice.
So, and vegetables. It's supposed to give a serving or a half a serving.
But I think what you have to do, again, even other listeners, if they want to check their juice, look at the side and find out how many carbohydrates per serving. So every time you are taking in 4 grams of carbohydrates, you're actually taking in a teaspoon of glucose or sugar. So if you're taking in maybe 10 grams of carbohydrates in a serving, that might be okay. But if you're taking in 24 in just a little glass of juice, that's too many.
Right.
So, and, you know, yeah. It's kind of looking at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I really enjoy your show, but every time I listen to it, I feel like I don't know what I can eat or drink anymore or what to feed my kids anymore.
Come to one of our classes.
I mean,
you know, it is, but because we have such an epidemic of insulin resistance and we have all these chronic health conditions, that's why
right.
we try to keep every Saturday we come out with the same message that people have to cut back on these carbs.
Right.
But that's the reality.
And, you know, with the kids, I do try to bake. So I use whole wheat flour with wheat germ, you know, so they're not getting as much refined sugar.
Yeah, and I think that's great.
But, I mean, they need to eat and they need to have treats, you know. And we don't keep pop in the house, but I feel overwhelmed when I listen to the show because I feel like there's no way I can...
Well, come and take a weight and wellness class because we have lots and lots and lots of ideas for you.
Okay.
Lots of great recipes, too.
I've been thinking about doing it, so I probably should. I just don't know when. Okay.
Well,
thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness. It may surprise you that people with insulin resistance have a higher rate of cataracts. You know, a major contributor to eye problems and cataracts is poor diet. Too many processed carbohydrates. So if you have a question for us today, 651-641-1071.
They paved paradise and put up a fucking lie.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. And before the break, we were discussing cataracts. Free radicals really attack the cell membrane of the lens in your eye. And you know, free radicals come from a lot of different sources, but especially in the form of sugar and trans fats. So, as a way to address cataracts, you can eat additional servings of broccoli, spinach, and kale, and other greens daily to help protect yourself from those cataracts.
And it doesn't take a lot of that. You can just throw a little bit in your soup or a little bit in your scrambled eggs, and you can have eggs and spinach, and it's great. And
right.
It's eye protective. So we're going to take a few callers here right now. Jeff, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. Your question, please.
Hi.
Hi there.
I work in a group home, and one of the guys I help care for is a man in his mid-30s, late onset type 1 diabetic, and he's required to have snacks throughout the day, two carb snack in the evening, one carb in the afternoon, and 3 for his morning snack. Do you have any suggestions on what are good snacks for a staple?
Sure. I think one of the things that you have to look at, Jeff, and Christine, I want you to help out on this too, is that, you know, to balance out blood sugar, especially for a diabetic, you need some healthy fat. So maybe cream cheese if they like something like that, or avocado, or nuts, or, you know, nut butter. Any of those worked for blood sugar balance. And then you add a little bit of carb, like a half an apple. You don't add too much because a diabetic can't have, you know, a half of fruit is a good size serving, or a half a cup of fruit. And then you add a little bit of protein, you know, maybe like a couple of slices of deli meat that doesn't have a lot of chemicals in it, or a couple of pieces of chicken breast, or a little bit of salmon salad or something like that. And that's going to balance out the blood sugar. And what we're really saying, and I know when you say 2 servings of carbs, you're meaning about 30 grams of carbs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's for diabetic people. That's extremely too much, I believe.
Yeah.
But again, if he's on insulin, it means that the insulin has to be monitored. And so you want to keep bringing that level down because you don't need that much insulin because, you know, it's interesting. It's like diabetics become insulin resistant because they've had too much insulin. And so, you know, it's managing those carbs for him is really the way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, he does get insulin.
Right.
Obviously, but
mm-hmm.
But what kind of nuts would be good?
almonds, pecans, walnuts, macadamia nuts. And what we recommend is to try and buy them either raw or dry roasted, because usually if they have oils on them, those oils aren't very good after they've been through the roasting process. And they don't usually use very healthy oils to begin with anyway. So those are real easy. Olives are real easy, too, for snacks.
Oh, yeah. Those are great ideas.
You mentioned the lunch meats, but those, of course, don't have any carbs in them. So.
No, but you combine all of them.
Yeah.
So you have some lunch meats, you have a half an apple, and then you have some almonds. And so that's a very balanced snack that's going to keep the blood sugar balanced through the night.
Yeah, but to get that up to 30 grams for his evening snack.
Well, that's probably
too high at night.
Yeah, that's too high.
Well, that's probably an issue for his endocrinologist then.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something you have to sit down and really look at. You know, we've written a lot of plans for group homes,
right.
menu plans, and we've worked. And so because many group homes have people that are diabetic, and
right.
we've written many plans and given them recipes, and they love it.
Right.
I mean, Christina, you just worked with somebody recently, didn't
right.
you?
Right. I just was talking with the staff person because I had worked with just one client from a group home, and they just applied the food changes to the whole home, and everybody's lost weight. Behavior problems have disappeared, and everybody's doing really well. And they are snacking with those balanced snacks, eating good meals, getting good breakfast in, and it's really working well for them.
Do you have any idea if Medicare would cover, like, a nutritional consultation?
Probably not. But I, you know, a lot of times parents are really willing to cover that. So, or, you know, what we've done is we've worked with the group home themselves and actually come up with, you know, menus and things that, and shopping lists and the whole, everything, you know, we tied the recipes in so that it's like a no-brainer. And it's interesting how they say, you know, they've cut their food budgets because they've been able to maximize the quality of foods and get the most benefits from them. And that was shocking to us because we always say quality foods.
Mm-hmm.
And they buy that and they've actually cut their foods budgets. So it's a win for the group home and certainly a win for the clients.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, well,
thanks
very much for the call. And I think what we're going to do is grab one more caller here. Hi, Pam, you have a question about pasta?
Yes. I usually try to eat very healthy without any carbs except a small piece of like whole wheat bread, and then I get my carbs from vegetables.
Yep, and that's a good
one. But I have tried that Dreamfield pasta, and it tastes just like regular pasta, and I'm wondering what you think of it.
I don't know the product. How many grams of carbohydrates does it have?
Okay, let me read it.
Okay.
Oh, let's see. Got to get in the light without my glasses here. It says that it has 42 carbs and only dietary fiber is 5.
Okay.
But it says digestible carbs, 5 grams per serving.
Yeah, I believe they put something in there called inulin
that
helps to affect how you... It affects how you digest it. It's a fiber.
Okay.
I know.
And
so,
would it be okay? Because I'm just wondering if it's more like a filler or if it could actually be a little bit healthy.
I think when you look at any kind of pasta, it's still a pretty processed food.
Yeah, I do see that inulin.
Yeah. So, you know, you think of what it starts at as a grain and then what it ends up as. You know, and again, we say occasionally people can do some pasta, but to try and get, you know, using wild rice or sweet potatoes or squash or even a red potato to get some of those starches in to help fill you up is going to be much better. And just use the pasta maybe in half a cup servings occasionally.
Oh, okay. Well, I've always wanted to call and ask you that, and today I did.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. You know, as all research indicates, insulin resistance is a major health problem. You know, the best solution is not a medication, but a plan to reduce the amount of processed carbohydrates you eat daily. You know, and really, we can help you with that plan. And we'll be back in a minute.
Set me free.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. And you know, if during the week this week you have a question about something we talked about on the show or anything else, you know, you can feel free. I think I have some time actually myself on Tuesday in our White Bear office. Just give me a call, 651-733-0000, and I would be happy to answer any of those questions personally.
And you know, I know we have some people that we're not going to be able to get to on the line. And so if you have questions, give Christina a call. Again, that number is 651-733-0000. And she has the answers. So, Christina, let's get back to our discussion on polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Right. You know, if you have polycystic ovary syndrome or a daughter who does, you know, guidance from a nutritionist who will help you reduce your carbs, probably down to about 25 to 30 grams at meals and 10 for a snack, you know, that is really the best answer. And good food can still taste great. There's still a lot of good foods you can eat. And what's going to happen is it's going to balance your hormones.
It is. You know, for most people, when you reduce your carbs, the cravings actually go away and the energy increases. And for most, people lose weight. But honestly, your sensitive biochemistry remains. So most people need nutritional support to continue to remain healthy in today's society. You know, there's muffins and there's all this stuff around, and it's so easy to grab that stuff. And it's you need that support to say, no, I don't think I want that today. You know, ongoing support is important.
It is. And, you know, this might mean that you have to pack your lunch. And especially for kids, if school lunch is the option, that's not going to be the best to help control blood sugar. You know, but your health, the health of your young daughters, they are worth it.
You know, another disease of insulin resistance is asthma. And that's kind of surprising, I think, for a lot of people. Research conducted at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin found insulin resistance is pro-inflammatory, meaning, yeah, it's inflammatory, and increases the risk of both asthma and allergies. That's interesting.
Yes, very interesting. You know, there's a lot of other studies that have been done, one specifically from Denmark. It had 3,600 men and women, and they found an association between insulin resistance and asthma as well.
And, you know, the rate of asthma and allergies has increased dramatically over the past several years, especially in children. So we go back to that juice. Maybe that's what's causing all this. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to ask that question, what is happening? And I guess the finger of blame, we got to point it at processed carbohydrates, because that's causing children to be insulin resistant and inflamed. Think about that.
Yeah.
Inflamed.
And when you think that's what's going on, a lot of times you can look at people and see that they're inflamed. So again, you know, cut out foods like cereal, the Pop-Tarts. I just saw a kid buy a couple boxes of them in the store the other day. French fries, the macaroni and cheese, chicken nuggets, juice and pop, and just start putting real food on the table and in your refrigerator and on the counters. You know, many of our clients no longer need to use their inhalers or their asthma medication, allergy medications when they really focus on changing their diet.
And if people start to think in terms of a meal having about 30 grams of carbohydrates, that's not a lot. That's
Mm-mm.
like, you know, 3-4 cups of vegetables, but it doesn't allow a lot of other kinds of carbohydrates to slide in there.
Right.
And that's for people that are having some of these chronic health conditions.
Right.
Now, if you don't have any of those health conditions, you probably can tolerate a little bit more carbohydrate. Or if you're a runner, or if you're really athletic and you're out there moving a lot, you burn up those carbohydrates. So, you know, that's fine.
Right.
But for people that have some of these chronic conditions, that's what we're talking about. So, you know, we often say, you know, food can be a problem or food can be your solution. And we want it to be your solution. Have a great day. Thank you for listening.
Life, I love you. All is groovy.